supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Game 3 happens at Citizens Bank Park today at 4:10, and Real Salt Lake meet the Union at PPL Park today at 4. This is WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a listener's challenge leads me to seriously investigate the issue of whether rabbits really do dig deep burrows in warrens and whether garden fencing needs to be deep to protect against them. We'll also talk to noted garden author Derek Fell about his new book, Vertical Gardening. Finally, a chance for someone to grow up on this show. Well, if we're going to do all that, we better hop right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Kathy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kathy. How are you?
I am good.
And where is Kathy good?
I am in Glenmore, Pennsylvania.
Very good. And I'd ask where you're bad, but I got in trouble for asking that question. So what's going on with Kathy in Glenmore?
Well, we are doing cleanup from a storm we had last June, June 24th of last year. We had a 15-minute tornado, 90-mile-an-hour wind storm.
And you actually had a tornado?
We believe so, but because we live in the boonies, it wasn't ever documented. But the winds at 90-mile-an-hour were documented.
Oh, okay. Okay. So what got damaged?
Everything. just about, all of our power lines uprooted and went down. And so you can imagine how many trees also uprooted and went down. And then some of the trees were just topped off. But we're doing a lot of massive cleanup at this point still. It's been a year of, you know, really devastation.
And was your home damaged?
No.
Cars?
The home was fine.
No car damage? Nothing like that?
No, just fences went down. You know, we have a farm and woods, and so sheds and barn and so on. But Okay. Luckily, we have an old Pennsylvania stone farmhouse, and it was just fine.
Yeah, those Dutchies built them good. So what can we do for you?
In the cleanup, we're trying to decide what to cut all the way down at this point, or, you know, whether to leave them. Some things are leafing out and looking fine, but they just don't have a top. And we don't know whether, you know, they're goners or not.
Well, it depends on the tree, to tell you the truth. Most of the trees that homeowners, quote-unquote, top are the ones that will eventually be killed by it. They're these kind of pyramidical, conical-shaped evergreens that come to a point. And, of course, the person who's doing the topping, it never occurs to them that point is the only part of the tree that's really actively growing, and they really are cutting the heads off. With deciduous trees, you have a lot more wiggle room. For instance, in my little peach orchards I have scattered across my property, I used to scoff at the technique called establishing a new central leader, which essentially meant, you know, the top part of the tree had gotten too high to reach the peaches, so you cut it off and something else is now the top branch. But kind of by default, you didn't establish anything. And I find that, for instance, the fruit trees absolutely require this or it's going to grow out of bounds. And with these trees, it's actually good to take off a number of branches every year. And you can take off the top one. Typically, you can even look at the tree and figure out how it's then going to grow to be its kind of a new tree. So do you have deciduous or evergreen?
Mostly deciduous. We have three white pines that lost their tops. They don't look so hot to
No.
me. But the others are all walnut, poplars, oak, all of those varieties.
Well,
cherries.
You know, tulip poplars are trash trees. They can't wait to get 200-pound dandruff to drop down on the surrounding area. They don't even need a tornado.
They ruin all the other trees. That's what happened to us. They came down and smashed them into the other trees.
Yeah, they're very weak, fast-growing trees. I mean, they're darn straight. That's the only thing you can say for them.
Mm-hmm.
I would worry about the white pines, even if they don't die for a couple of years. As you point out, a white pine without a hat looks awful sad, doesn't it? I think my basic advice is you should probably plan to take the white pines down, have the stumps pulled at the same time, and that way you'll get that ground back to grow new things. As to the other trees, if they leafed out well this spring, I would either have an arborist or somebody with a cherry picker, or you guys, if you're trained and you have the right protective equipment, to simply go up and remove all the dead and broken branches and then see where you are and let the trees just recover from that for the whole rest of this summer. And then this coming winter or early spring, maybe then you can start shaping some of those deciduous trees to try to establish a new shape. You know, some deciduous trees are like Gumby. You can play around. You can really get them to grow new arms and legs. It's very difficult to impossible with evergreens. But I tell you, the process of removing big trees and of pruning off unsafe limbs from big trees is very expensive. So
yeah,
you should definitely get a couple of quotes and get it all done at the same time by the same people. This is not a job that you want to be doing week by week. Get the best estimate you can. Get the stumps pulled of the trees you're going to remove. And if there's kind of an in-between tree where you're not going to plant anything else there, but it's clearly dead, like a deciduous tree, if you want to leave the trunk standing for like 6, 8, 10 feet, that becomes a tremendous home for woodpeckers and other meat-eating birds. You're always supposed to leave those snags, so to speak, as homes for wildlife.
Right.
All right, Kath?
All right.
Well, good luck to you, and I'm glad nobody got hurt.
Yes, we are too.
All right, take care.
All right, thank you. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Greg, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Greg. Where are you, sir?
Well, I called about a garden in my home in Conshohocken. I'm right now in Nashville. Different story.
Oh, okay. But, No. We want the story, Greg. What are you doing in Nashville? You selling a song?
yeah, something like that. It's a trade show for medical software.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah,
I'm selling something.
Yeah, you're selling a song all day long. All right, Greg, what can we do for your garden back in Conshohocken?
Well, I'm interested in some methods of getting rid of insects. I noticed recently, and I just started really with gardening this year. I've done tomatoes and peppers, and those are real easy things to do. But I'm trying some different things, and I've been noticing a lot, or my snow peas, that the leaves at the bottom are getting thin, right? It looks like something's chewing on it, but I can never find the animal or pest. But it's thinning out the leaves, so all that's sort of left is the spines of it, right?
Right.
And so I'm thinking, okay, I've read some books. Maybe it's slugs. I've noticed slugs in my yard before. Maybe it's some sort of aphids or something like this. I'm not really sure because I can't see them.
No. See, that's the thing. Aphids are known to attack pea plants. Their favorite meal is a nice rose, and they go after pepper plants, too. But you know when you have an aphid infestation, there's black sooty mold all around from their excrement. And if left unchecked, they actually will smother the entire plant with their nasty little bodies. No, I would say that you more than likely have slugs. And that's the damage. They start eating the leaves down low. You're lucky they didn't. How tall are your snow pea plants?
They're about a foot and a half right now.
You got any flowers on them?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. So the plants are surviving, and obviously, yeah, I don't think you have cutworms because the plants have not been severed. When you get back to Conshohocken, wait until like 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the evening, crack the cheapest beer you can find, and fill little margarine tubs and put it around the base of your plants that are under attack. In the morning, if it is slugs, your little tubs of beer will be filled with dead, drunken slugs. Don't put the beer out first thing in the morning, or it'll go stale and repel the slugs.
Huh.
And then, if, you know, that's just for detection. You can continue to buy them cheap beer if that's your idea of a good time. But you can also buy a non-toxic slug bait that is simply a yeasty bait with some iron phosphate mixed into it. And slugs go for yeast. That's why they drown themselves in beer. But they can't metabolize the iron. So this is just a miracle cure, because slug poisons in the garden used to be some of the most toxic things used in horticulture. And instead, today, the slug bait of choice is nothing but iron and yeast, both of which enhance soil life when they break down after killing your slugs.
Hmm. Terrific. Thank you very much for your advice.
Bring back some cheap beer from Nashville, and you're good to go.
Alrighty.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn all of my gardening friends in and around the area of Erie, PA, that I will travel to the very top of our fine Commonwealth to appear at Goodell Gardens in Edinburgh this summer. I'll do a meet and greet on Saturday evening, July 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m., and then deliver one of Goodell's famed Tea Time lectures on Sunday, July 24th from 3 to 5 p.m. But don't you go looking for all the details at the events and appearances section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with vertical gardening, how to keep rabbits out of your garden, and of course, lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Moss Acres supports You Bet Your Garden. Moss is a low-maintenance solution for shady spots where grass doesn't like to grow. Moss Acres offers information and a variety of mosses online at mossacres.com.
It's 1119. This is WHYY.
Lancaster City Arts is proud to support WHYY. Lancaster City Arts, 125 art venues, all within one walkable community. From galleries, art studios, museums, and an art college, to music, poetry, dance, photography, professional theater, and symphony. It's an opportunity to explore something different in an art scene that's quite unexpected itself. Lancaster City Arts. The journey starts online at lancasterarts.com.
Supporting WHYY, the Solar and Wind Expo, coming to the Valley Forge Convention Center June 11th and 12th. Seminars and exhibits will demonstrate that the time is now to make the change to renewable energy. For directions, thesolarandwindexpo.com.
The WHYY forecast, chance for thunderstorms today. High temperature 81 tomorrow, some sun with a high of 86. Right now it's cloudy and 75 degrees.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up, lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the question of the week: do rabbits really dig deep burrows? But right now, it is time to bring on our special guest, who's going to teach us all how to get more productivity out of the garden space we have by growing up. Derek Fell, the author of a new book called Vertical Gardening from Rodale Press. Derek, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. Now, we go back to my time at Organic Gardening Magazine.
Yes, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. When you overcharged us for stock photography, along with all the others of your ilk.
Not true.
I'm familiar with all of your more recent books, which are kind of about the art of gardening, the Monet.
Yes, Monet, Frank Lloyd Wright. Mm-hmm.
First, I mean, it's not a dichotomy to me, because when we were buying images back when I was the editor of Organic Gardening, mm-hmm. You and a couple others like you tended to have a very well-shot photo of every specific variety or type of plant that we needed. And that showed to me that you were doing a lot of gardening. We actually
yes.
used your garden in a
right.
couple of shots.
Yeah.
But then all of your books had this artistic design, mm-hmm. or even beyond design, just stone appreciation of beautiful flower gardens.
Yes, well, I've been photographing gardens and plants since 1960. And advantageously, with vertical gardening, I was able to go into my file and look at all the vertical gardens that I'd ever photographed and include them in the book. Vertical gardening at one time, I think, used to be called trellis gardening. But today, there are many more ways to garden up than trellis. I mean, you can put bicycle wheels against a wall and grow squash vines, for example. You can have garden netting to grow your tomatoes 6 feet, 10 feet high. So that's the title, vertical gardening, that we came up with to encompass many kinds of growing up stakes and saving space. I mean, that's the key, because when you grow up, you need a very small footprint. And the compost that you put in the soil and the watering that you do and the mulching that you do is much less than if you're gardening horizontally, because, of course, you're having to deal with pathways and vines that stretch out a long distance.
And you're addressing what has been the number one, I wouldn't call it problem, but aspect where we can be a benefit to the gardener. Since the first day I was editor of Organic Gardening Magazine, which is, you know, 2 decades ago, mm-hmm. which is at our first meeting, we were told people are growing in smaller spaces every year,
yes.
but wanting to grow more of their own food and
right.
more different kinds of plants. And
yes.
that trend, if anything, has accelerated. The smaller your property, the more
right.
intense your gardening desire, it seems.
Yeah. Well, today, of course, there is tremendous competition for your spare time. And you don't have time anymore to garden the traditional way. People want high yields in less space and using less work. And vertical gardening does that. I mean, you take, for example, a simple snap bean. If you grow a bush bean, you get maybe, what, 3 weeks of a yield? If you grow a pole snap bean, you've got it yielding right until fall frost. So in the space that you would grow one bush bean, you're growing a yield that's 10 times what a bush bean would deliver.
And I like bush beans. Bush beans are a friend of mine. But I will also grant you that the biggest benefit of growing pole beans versus bush beans is you're picking at eye height a lot of time, as opposed to with bush beans,
yes.
by definition, you're bending over.
Yes, and you're raising your product off the ground, off the soil. You don't get as much disease.
Any yeah. plant that has a natural vining habit, you not only save space, you improve the quality, the vigor, the cut the problems in half
yeah, yes.
when you do as my mother always told me to do and grow up.
Right. Well, of course, you know, you have your traditional vegetables that you grow up. Snap peas, for example, will grow, what, 8 feet high before the summer sets in and puts an end to the harvest. But, you know, consider other items like climbing spinach, Malabar spinach. It's heat resistant. It doesn't poop out like regular rosette spinach.
Now, let me remind our listeners, this is a topic we've talked about in the past, that real spinach can really only be grown during the cool weather months. Spinach just exists to bolt as soon as the mm-hmm. weather gets hot.
You know, there's a couple of other ones that I'd like to mention. One is vegetable spaghetti or vegetable spaghetti squash.
Oh, I love growing spaghetti squash.
Well, I can grow a dozen.
I would never let it lay on the ground. I
no,
like it.
You grow it up. It has tendrils. It will automatically climb. You can harvest a dozen fruit easily on one vine.
And it's as advertised. When it's ripe and you pick it, and you bring it in, and you bake it, and then you scoop out
yes.
the insides, you get spaghetti. It's a miracle.
You bake it for 40 minutes at 450 degrees. You slice it through the middle. You take a fork. You scoop out the seeds, and you unravel the spaghetti. It's a low-calorie substitute for pasta spaghetti, and unlike pasta spaghetti, when you add a sauce to it, like, say, a parsley butter sauce, or clam sauce, or even a marinara sauce, the vegetable spaghetti will soak it up, and you'll get a much more flavorful meal.
And, of course, all the melons, There are such drama queens about,
yes,
you know, getting good airflow. Why would you ever let your melons,
I know,
lay on top of the soil? Would you do that with your children, ladies and gentlemen? Hey, should we trellis our kids for better airflow, keep them out of trouble?
Kids love vertical gardening, by the way. I mean, they just love to be able to grow something up. And that's how I started in gardening. I planted some peas up a trellis that my grandfather gave me, and that got me hooked on gardening forever. But I want to mention another one in the squash family, and that's the trombone zucchini.
Sure, sure.
Have you grown that one?
One of the summer squash,
right? It's a gorilla in the garden. You don't want to grow it across the ground. You want to put it against a trellis, and a pretty hefty trellis too. But that thing will produce 50 fruit. It starts off green with a long neck. I've sliced 300 slices from a single fruit at the immature stage.
He's counting the number of slices, ladies and gentlemen. This man clearly has too much time on his hands.
And then, of course, if you leave it, it turns brown like a butternut squash, and you can eat it like a winter squash. So that's a phenomenal vegetable to grow.
Whereby traditional zucchini just turns into a gigantic, inedible baseball bat.
Yes, although there are vining types of zucchini. Black Forest is one that I'm familiar with.
We're talking with Derek Fell, who's the author of the new book out from Rodale called Vertical Gardening. Now, Derek, explain how the book is broken up. You give instructions, how-to stuff,
yes,
on everything from the basic types of support that people are used to mm-hmm. your artsy-fartsy kind of funky bicycle wheel,
yes,
thingies.
Right.
But you also do a lot of variety selection, even inside vining crops.
Yes.
You pick the ones that you think are the best at vining.
That's right. Actually, the book is 300 pages, and it's broken up into three sections, basically. First of all, you have your vegetable section because, of course, people are extremely interested in high yields and minimum space today. I also include some perennial vines like the perennial sweet pea, which doesn't get the problems that the annual sweet pea gets. There are woody plants that vine like clematis and wisteria. And, of course, many fruits can be grown up. Grapes are an obvious example, but also the hardy kiwi vine that comes from,
right,
Siberia.
Big favorite of a lot of growers.
Another favorite of mine, of course, is the trumpet creeper because it attracts hummingbirds.
Well, you don't get hummingbirds walking on the ground to get to your flowers. You know, if you want hummingbirds, you want to grow vines with red tubular flowers. It's dirt simple.
Yes, and the native scarlet honeysuckle is another good one for attracting hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm. And again, all of these plants require support or will benefit from your ingenious support. And looking through the book, I would say that anybody who constructs anything that holds the plants they want to grow, mm-hmm, you'd congratulate them and take notes. This is not a book with real rules. This is a book that urges people to have fun.
Well, obviously, you can go to a garden center and you can buy trellises for less than $40. But I like to build my own using bamboo. I don't know whether you have a bamboo grove, but
I inherited one. I inherited one. I've made a lot of trellis and bean poles in my time. And also, I have an old house in the country. I have, you know, a big outdoor shed full of old fencing,
yes,
and stakes and supports. And every year, some transformer will,
yes,
take place in my garden.
You know, another decision you must make when you're considering vertical gardening is whether to grow against a wall or whether to make it a freestanding unit.
And I can't see many benefits to the wall unless this is a specialty crop that needs a lot of heat and doesn't need airflow.
Well, I have actually experimented against walls, and I find that the house heat from the wall will help the vine if you have a late frost, for example. You will have other plants in the garden might get affected by frost, but a vine against the wall will survive from the heat. And also you can have a freestanding unit. Now, with a freestanding unit, one of my favorite crops is lima beans.
Oh! You know, well, no, nobody's perfect, Eric.
You don't like lima beans?
Oh, Lord, you couldn't pay me to eat a lima bean.
What?
No! It's like the only reason lima beans exist is to assault otherwise decent sweet corn in the making of succotash. All right. The book is Vertical Gardening, new from Rodale. The author is Derek Fell. Derek, thanks again for coming in and being a guest on You Bet Your Garden.
Terrific. Thanks a lot.
And now back to your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Alyssa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Alyssa. Where are you?
I'm calling you from Princeton, New Jersey.
Very good. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a beginner gardener, or at least a beginner in terms of actually trying to make it grow instead of just crossing my fingers.
Okay.
So I'm putting in three new beds, and I'm trying to make the soil right for these little things to become big things in. And I know I'm a little late in the season, but so be it. And so I know I'm not supposed to use wood mulch. I read all your things, and I just was hoping to be able to describe to you the conditions of my soil, and then you could tell me what's really important to do, what I have to turn in, how many inches of it, and how to make it in those little tiny wells around the several hundreds of ferns that I'm going to be planting.
Oh, forget it. Forget it. The ferns will overwhelm everything. Does that mean that it's very acidic and shady back there?
Well, it is totally shady. I don't know what the pH is, and I was going to ask you whether I need to test that before, you know, whether that's a crucial part I dig stuff into it, or whether I'm supposed to test that afterwards.
The ferns are going to do great. What else are you talking about planting?
I was going to put in ferns, astilbe, semisifuga, stackies, foam flower, and lily of the valley.
Well, you know, lily of the valley quickly becomes invasive.
I know. I thought I'd be risky.
You don't think
the ferns will hold them back, or should I?
Well, I mean, that'll be a heavyweight title match, but, you know, I'm always ripping out my ferns to try to give my other plants some room. And it sounds like you are suffering a severe case of first-time gardener's disease.
Where you're taking on too much?
Exactly. You turn through the giant 10,000 pages of Hortus and go, I'll use this one, and I'll use this one, and I'll use this one. So if you plant ferns, I would urge you to go to some books by people like Rick Dark and look at woodland gardens, plants that will really go well with the ferns. Remembering you're going to have to keep the ferns under control. Are you building raised beds for these?
Well, I've been digging up all the ground, pulling out all the rocks by as much as my bones can handle now. So I'm turning over all the soil that's never been turned over before, mostly to get the rocks out. And then my plan is to then rent a tiller and mix leaf compost in with it.
No, you'll create nothing but weeds. Do you have a source for the plants you want to install?
Yes, and in fact, they're all already ordered. I did all of it online because I've got so many. I did, you know, all these tiny little plugs and bare roots and all that sort of stuff.
You're kind of working backwards. That would be something that you would get delivered in March or April. But you're going to be planting them in like June. And, you know, they're going to burn up in the summer heat. You need full-size plants at this point. You might want to hold on to those starts, coax them through the summer, keep them in shade, give them a little bit of water, give them a little bit of food, and plant them in the fall. But it is the kiss of death to put small plants into the ground at the height of summertime. I mean, that's just common sense. Since the plants are on their way, and I'm kind of surprised they'd be sending you these tiny little things at this time of year, I would just put those to the side, try to keep them alive, and then plant them in the fall when they can go dormant and get established and hit the ground running next year. It sounds like if you've removed most of the rocks, around Princeton. There are great sources in municipal compost. Just get one of these big bulk loads of compost delivered, spread it like an inch thick on the surface of the soil. And then I would also start working with a local nursery, a local supplier, who you can use for advice and stuff like that. Put a couple of big plants in, keep them well watered till they establish, you know, try some of the ferns, but really be thinking about, because you got such a late start and you're really not even ready yet.
Right.
You really want to be looking towards fall planting. So really your goal is to keep the plants that arrive alive through July and August. And that's going to be protecting them from the afternoon sun, making sure they don't dry out. But if you can do that, they will have a better long-term survival rate than even if you planted them in the spring. But my advice to you is spend the next month or so preparing the soil and then install some nice size plants at the end of August.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'll keep all my fingers crossed and hope that all this comes out all right somehow.
It'll be a good story.
Yes. I love good stories.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much, Mike. Have a great day.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind those gardeners battling the wetness woes this spring that it's always best to resist the urge to work on your plants when their leaves are wet, especially disease-prone drama queens like tomatoes, roses, and fruit trees, and to try your best to avoid cutting your lawn when it's wet. Yeah, the timing can be really tricky, but your patience will be rewarded by future problems avoided. But don't you go checking your saturation situation just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and a fairly definitive answer to the question, do rabbits dig deeply? I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
It's 11:38, temperature now up to 77 in Center City.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. There's a big farm fest today and tomorrow at Maisie's Farm in Chester County. The deadline to enter Wilmington's City Garden Contest is this coming Friday, June 17th. I am pleased to host this year's summer soiree at WHYY this coming Thursday evening, June 16th, from 7 to 9 p.m. A night of food, drink, and fun with indoor gardens, special guests, live music, and me. That's this coming Thursday evening right here at the WHYY Technology Center. And you can celebrate summer Swedish style at Midsommarfest at the American Swedish Historical Museum next Saturday. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
If you've got a little spare time, we invite you to become part of a Voices in the Family book club by reading The Story of a Beautiful Girl. Then discuss the book with Dr. Dan Gottlieb and author Rachel Simon on Monday, June 27th at noon right here on WHYY. Forecast for today, thunderstorms a possibility, the high about 81. Tonight, thunderstorms, the low 69. Tomorrow, some sun, but again, a chance for thunderstorms, the high 86 for Sunday. Right now, it's 77 degrees.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. A very thoughtful response from a listener led me back to the world of research to find out, do rabbits really dig deep burrows, or can they be excluded with a fence just a couple inches sunk in the ground? We'll answer that question after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Paula, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Paula. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am just fine, thank you. Where is Paula good?
In Michigan, Garden City.
Oh, Garden City. So you're calling us with all your fabulous tips.
No, it's only my third year gardening, and I'm not having a lot of luck.
Okay, so what's up?
Over the last 3 weeks, well, actually, this week's been okay, but we've had more rain than we've had in 22 years, and my neighbor behind me he had hills and a lot of beautiful landscaping for many years, and he leveled it. So now his yard is about 6 inches higher than my yard. The neighbors on both sides, they're still level with me. But when it rains, now my yard floods.
You mean that he deliberately changed his landscaping? His landscaping was not taken away with the flood. He decided he wanted a new look.
Correct.
And that look has now exposed you to massive amounts of water that his old look was managing brilliantly.
Correct. So we had 3 weeks of pretty much nonstop rain, less about four beautiful days. So on one of those beautiful days, I thought, okay, the rain's done, and that was last Sunday. I planted my tomato plants because I haven't gotten tomatoes in the past. I went and bought big, beautiful cages, hoping this was going to be my year for tomatoes. And last Tuesday, we had so much rain that I had about 12 inches of water in the back of my yard, in the front probably about 8 inches of water up to the foundation of my house. So my tomato plants were completely buried in water. So I went out and I pulled them all out of the ground, and I mean, I had to reach down like I was pulling seaweed out of a lake, and I put them in a utility tub with some dirt, but the dirt was all wet, so I mixed in some potting soil to try to dry it out a little bit.
Okay.
I'm wondering if they're shot and what I can do to try to help my garden. I did put eggshells in when I put them in.
No, we're long past eggshells, Paula. Did you start the plants from seed or did you buy started plants?
Actually, I ordered them online, so they came. They were already probably 8 or 9 inches tall when I got them.
Okay. Is this flat ground?
Yes.
Okay, well, your first line of defense is you're going to have to build raised beds, or you're never going to grow anything again.
Okay.
I can tell you many times my area has flooded, and we've had a foot of water on the ground. And my raised beds are always held high above it. And, you know, the drainage, of course, at that point isn't great. But the plants are not underwater. The soil is still exposed to the sun and the air. And it has saved me through some titanic storms that have blown through. I don't think anybody should be growing summer plants, annual plants in flat ground. That's so 19th century. I mean, you really got to be building raised beds just for protection. And then long term, you're going to have to build a berm, or you're going to have to install some landscaping or some kind of diversion to stop the water coming onto your property and try to get back to the way things used to be.
Okay, what was that first thing you said, a berm?
A raised mound of earth that would be like an earthen dam that water would rush up against and, provided it did its job right, would divert the water into somebody else's backyard, preferably somebody you didn't care for too much.
Okay. All right. Can I put those tomato plants back into the ground, or are they shot?
What do they look like?
They look good. I'm starting to get flowers on them, and like I said, they're still in that utility tub because the ground is probably just now dry enough to put them back into the ground.
First thing first, you got to frame out some raised beds. You got to raise that soil up so this doesn't happen again.
Okay.
That'll be your first line of defense, and then you really got to look at your landscape and figure out some kind of structure, some kind of trench. You might be able to dig a trench and line it with drain tiles to carry the water away. You might be able to build a rain garden. Go to our website. Go to You Bet Your Garden. Go to Garden Answers A to Z. Look under R for raised beds. And
okay.
Look under R for rain garden.
Okay.
That may be something that you can utilize. But you can't ignore it. It sounds like it's also threatening your home.
Yeah.
You don't want to start doing structural damage to your home. That's more important than a couple of tomato plants.
Okay.
All right?
Yes, I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, Paula.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mac, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you, Mac?
I'm doing good, Mac. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing fine, except for my slug problem, Mike. They're eating up all my cabbage and Brussels sprouts.
Oh, I bet they are. Where are you, sir?
I'm in East Tennessee.
Uh-oh.
Elizabeth in Tennessee. I'm on the North Carolina-Virginia line.
All right, so you got slugs invading your garden, and you see them.
Well, I've been going out there at night with a light and examining them and finding them under the leaves. And I've tried the iron phosphate pellets, and I've been using now, since it's dried up and it's gotten warm, I've been using some silicone dioxide. I'm still not getting it under control. I've tried beer traps. I don't know what I haven't tried.
Now, you say silicone dioxide. Do you mean diatomaceous earth?
That's exactly what it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Diatomaceous earth is not only a good slug killer, it's a good roach powder, but the ground has to be dry for it to work. So you got a mess of slug problems here, fella. Now, is your garden heavily shaded? Is it wet? What kind of mulch do you have down?
It is well mulched, and it only gets morning sun. It is heavily shaded, but like I said, it only gets morning sun, and it stays pretty damp.
Okay, so what kind of mulch we got out there?
There's no wood mulch in it at all. It's all just compost, and there's peat moss. And when I first started, it was a lot of clay, and I've just added lots of compost and lots of peat moss to it.
Okay, well, stop with the peat moss. That's not a soil additive. That's just to change the pH. And if you get too frisky with that, you're going to have a soil too acidic for your plants. The compost is a good idea, but no shredded leaves, no grass clippings, no pine straw, no straw.
No, not at all.
Oh, man. You are. And have you had to water this garden, or has it simply been wet enough for you?
It's been wet enough. I've watered one time when I first put out the plants, and I haven't had to water anymore.
Yeah, okay. Well, I tell you, you're not doing much wrong. You're doing a lot of things right. Yes, you have your soil mulched, but not with any kind of mulch that's going to give slugs protection. You know, sometimes if you're using, like I do, a shredded leaf mulch and you get a slug infestation, you got to pull it back for a couple of weeks and let the slugs cook inside of that so the ground can dry out. If there's any way you can prune or cut back any of the plants that are shading the garden, let a little more sunshine in, that would be good. Putting out little saucers of beer, you know, to only put them out in the evening. You
know, I know it now. No, I didn't know it before. No, I've left them out like for about 3 days and then just dump them and redo them.
Yeah, you get them all the first evening. You crack the beer at like 7-8 o'clock at night. You fill up your little tubs, check it in the morning, because after it heats up during the day, slugs won't be attracted to it. So you want to get your biggest kill in the evening. All of the plants you've mentioned, cabbages and Brussels sprouts, they can sacrifice their lower leaves, which are probably slug-bitten, right?
Right, that's my next question.
What I want you to do is I want you to pull the worst ones off, and I want you to pile them up kind of in a circle around the plants about a foot away. And then when you come out for your midnight run, you can just collect that leaf matter or dust it with diatomaceous earth, because they'll go for the low-hanging fruit. And leave the area around your plants, leave the earth as open and as bare as possible, and let some air get in there. Do you have raised beds or flat ground?
I have raised beds.
Line the top of your raised bed frames with cheap copper flashing. Slugs can't cross over copper. If you start saving eggshells and crush them up, you can make circles of crushed eggshells around your plants. They can't cross over calcium either. And then if you live out in the country, get a couple of ducks or geese. So, you know, you would get these amazingly colored eggs, and the ducks and geese would keep your slugs under control.
That's some good ideas. I'll certainly try.
I've been watching your weather this spring, man. It's been against you. You've been soaking wet.
Oh, well, Mike, I sure appreciate it, and thanks for the information.
All right, Mac. Good luck.
Okay, thanks.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Do rabbits dig deeply? Our very intriguing question this week comes from Greg in Newmanstown, PA, which he notes is 20 miles west of Reading. He writes, Mike, I read a recent article in the Reading Eagle newspaper about an appearance in our area where you were quoted as saying, because rabbits can't dig and don't climb, a fence doesn't have to be buried deeply in the ground and doesn't need to be high off the ground. Were you misquoted, or did you just err in your answer? According to Wikipedia, quote, all rabbits except cottontails live underground in burrows or warrens. And the University of California rabbit management page states that fencing must be sunk 6 to 10 inches into the ground, and a few inches should also be buried laterally to deter rabbits from digging underneath it. I found several other sources, studies, and accounts proving that rabbits can and do dig. I bring this up because I was asked by my mother if she should worry about rabbits digging under her garden fence, which ends where it meets the ground. Based on my research, I told her we should do something, but she came to me a day later with a copy of that article and told me I was wrong. I showed her my research, but what about others who could have problems after following your advice? I kindly ask that you take action to correct this error. Well, bad advice coming out of my mouth would be nothing new, Greg. And the Beagle Reporter, that's what we call that paper locally, quoted me close to perfectly. I've been telling audiences that American rabbits aren't good diggers for many years now, often reminding the crowd of how they've all found nests of baby bunnies sitting on the surface, maybe camouflaged by some grass clippings, but otherwise out in the open. If mom or dad could dig, I ask, why wouldn't the babies be in a burrow where they'd be much safer? But like many things I've repeated for years in my talks, I can't remember the original source of my information. And your very thoughtful email had me wondering if I didn't get crossed up on this one somehow. The references you sent, both from great sources, didn't help me much. The Wikipedia entry made it hard to figure out which kinds of rabbits do what and which parts of the world those kind of rabbits inhabit. And the University of California bulletin was great advice for Californians, but they have 8 different species of rabbits, and I couldn't tell how many, if any, were the kind that invade gardens here in the East. And to make things even more confusing, the very next paragraph in that California Extension bulletin reads, if you don't bury the bottom of the wire fence, you'll need to stake the bottom edge to deter rabbits from passing underneath it, which is darn close to the advice I give. Now, the more I researched this topic, the more confused I became. Then Stephen Van Tessel came to my rescue, the resident critter expert for the University of Nebraska at Lincoln School of Natural Resources. Dr. Van Tessel coordinates the Internet Center for Wildlife Damage Management, a co-production of Cornell, Clemson, Utah State, and the University of Nebraska. In his reply to my frantic, help me, email, he explained that while both articles quoted by our questioner specifically state that all rabbits except cottontails burrow, they fail to mention that cottontails are the most widely distributed rabbit in the United States and are typically the types of rabbits that need to be kept away from garden plants and the bark of tender young trees. Then, eerily echoing a line I use in my talks, right after I call the deeply burrowed Bugs Bunny a fraud for his Brooklyn accent, Dr. Van Tessel added that European rabbits dig holes, Eastern cottontails do not. And it turns out that even the American rabbits that do burrow aren't living in Warner Brothers-style underground dens replete with pool tables and recliners. Even the notorious black-tailed jackrabbit doesn't dig a deep hole, he notes. It's more of a shallow depression in the ground. Other sources he sent me added that even rabbits who can dig prefer to use old and unoccupied underground dwellings like groundhog holes for their dens. I feel your pain, he concluded. Here at the Internet Center for Wildlife Damage Management, we deal with wildlife mythology all the time. Ah, but he's wrong there. This has been far from a painful experience. It was a very thoughtful question. I wound up being right, which never makes for a bad day. And doing research after such a challenge helps keep me from relying on old stale routines, which might be wrong, and to hone even my correct advice a bit. To wit, I will now add a few extra words when I'm talking about wabbits from now on. Something like most of the rabbits who attack gardens, especially in the East, are cottontails. And since they don't dig burrows, a low fence buried a few inches in the ground is all you need to keep them out. And let this be a reminder to all of us that while there is much great information on the net, sometimes even a good source like Wikipedia or that extension bulletin from California can lead you down the garden path. One reason we always pester people for their location is that it often makes a big difference in the answer. If you want information on rabbits in Pennsylvania, that's where you look for the advice, not on the other side of the continent. Well, that sure was an interesting look at the wide world of wabbits now, wasn't it? Luckily for yous, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in depth, with links to all the references we just mentioned, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to drop a bag of bunnies inside my garden if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live, put the actual subject in the subject line, and please check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Al Banks. Our webmasters are Rich the Lionhearted Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our intern Jessica Mandick and our shiny new volunteer Heather McLean are both cute as a bunny, as is Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. We've had help the past few weeks from future media star Elizabeth Arrett. Our fenced-in editor is Al Banks. I'm tunnel-dwelling Mike McGrath. Hey, nobody ever accused me of being cute as a bunny, and what? What's that, Alexis? Oh, yeah, as our prized producer notes, I do, however, have the same color hair as Peter Cottontail. Nice, pick on the old guy, an easy target, who will try and wince through his beat-up bifocals so he can see you next week. They look like little caterpillars or slugs, but leaf-chewing sawflies are actually baby wasps. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how to protect your roses from this unusual foe. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Whether it's gardenia, green beans, or grape hyacinth, join us for Mike's weekly Gab Fest, You Bet Your Garden, Saturday mornings at 11 here on WHYY. Philadelphia.